More and more people are choosing natural and holistic medicine because of the real and sustainable results achieved. A patient story discusses the healing journey that real people have experienced and how it has changed their lives.
In today's case discussion, we'll be talking about homeopathy, which in itself is a unique system of medicine. It's often targeted by the conservative scientific community more than any other natural therapy. This is because when trying to understand how homeopathy works within the context of modern pharmacodynamics or pharmacognosy, it simply doesn't fit the mold. However, clinically, it works repeatedly, which is demonstrated by its global resurgence.
My own personal story with homeopathy was really exciting, and that's why I was very keen to talk about homeopathy. When I was a young fellow, I had terrible, terrible psoriasis. I could never wear a black t-shirt. It was always like wearing a snowstorm on my shoulders. It was all in my scalp. And when I was in my 20s and I was a student of natural medicine myself, I went to my homeopath, who was one of my lecturers. And you won't believe this unless you've been to a homeopath or tried homeopathy. He gave me 3 drops of a remedy to take for 7 days. And my psoriasis that I'd had for 20 years had completely disappeared. And that was over 40 years ago now. So I have not had psoriasis since. It was quite a remarkable outcome. And I practiced as a homeopath myself a little bit as part of my naturopathy. And I saw some remarkable things happen. People with eczema and psoriasis and other long-term conditions. I wouldn't consider myself to be an amazing homeopath. And that's why I've got the remarkable Peter Berryman. Hello, Peter.
Thank you. Good morning, all. Good afternoon. Good evening, whatever your time zone might be today.
Right, Peter. Peter's been an acquaintance of mine in the world of natural medicine, holistic medicine for, I don't know, Peter, maybe 30 years or thereabouts.
I graduated in 1985 in Sydney, the New South Wales College of Natural Therapies. And that's when I graduated as a naturopath with all those multiple modalities. But I made the bold choice to, in my humble opinion, pick the best of the bunch and specialize just in homeopathy for the last 35, 38 years, whatever it is.
You're almost an expert by now then, almost.
Just a beginner.
And double fortunately, we also have a lady called Melissa Kupsch on board. And Melissa is an interesting character to me because she started off as a student of naturopathy, had an experience which we'll dissect shortly, and then became a homeopath herself. And I dare say that she seems to be one of the rising stars of homeopathy. So, Melissa, hello.
Hello, and thank you. Yes, I think the world at the moment is definitely going through a great awakening and resurgence in regards to homeopathy. So I'm grateful to be in this position where we just get to sort of rise up with it.
Some would argue that you're pushing that resurgence, so well done.
Thank you.
But we're also here to discuss you, Melissa, as a patient, because you came into homeopathy because of 2 personal experiences. One was involving you and one was involving your sister. So you started off as a student of naturopathy, and my understanding is, please correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that your sister had recurrent cystitis, wasn't dealing with it very well through the normal channels, antibiotics and whatever. And you laid down the gauntlet to Peter, who was your lecturer at the time, and said, if you can fix my sister, I'll switch over to more homeopathy. Does that sound about right?
So, yes. And to give you context on that, my dad is a medical doctor. So when my sister started to be hospitalized, you know, every second month with this recurrent cystitis, he had tried everything. And I mean, she had the best specialists in the Queensland hospitals and, you know, the file on her was this thick and they still had no idea why this infection was getting into her blood. So at the same time as that, I'm in obviously studying to be a naturopath. Peter was my lecturer at the time for anatomy and physiology. And she had also done all of the natural therapies like that I knew of. So she had done Chinese medicine, acupuncture, naturopathy, diet, grounding. She'd quit her job. By this point, she's pretty much completely bladder incontinent from all of the drugs and just all of, you know.
How old was therapies. She?
She was 21 at that time.
Okay, that's a fairly significant persistent infection. Any idea what caused it?
Well, it was really rooted in the mental and emotional sort of spiritual aspects. So what would happen happen is if she would have sex, she would automatically pretty much be that, it'd be a trip to hospital. Infection is going into her blood. The whole body was reacting to that. Didn't matter. It wasn't, you know, any allergy. They ruled all these things out. She wasn't allergic to a particular boyfriend. There was just, they could not explain why this was happening. So at the end of all of their investigations over, you know, 7 years of this just relentless back and forward, they pretty much just said, look, you need to be on prophylactic antibiotics every day for the rest of your life and you can't have sex. That's sort of the end of it. So, you know, in your early 20s, that's a bit doom and gloom, really. So that was when, you know, Peter would bang on in class. He'd slip in these little, you know, homeopathy is really great. You'd love homeopathy. To which for many years I had sort of fobbed off, uninterested, had never heard of homeopathy, wasn't going to devote, you know, time and money studying it if I had never heard of it. But yeah, we did our consult in depth. He prescribed her those magic drops under the tongue. And what came next, you just can hardly believe it unless it, you experience it yourself.
Let's just go back a bit. Firstly, I can't imagine the anxiety that your sister must have gone through when she met a new partner and thought, you know, this is someone I'd like to be with intimately. Mm. That must have just been a whole new world of fear. And secondly, I just wonder what your dad's opinion of it was, if you don't mind saying. He's a GP, right?
He's a GP. And in regards to what was happening to her, just again, just one of these things. I think back in the day, he thought it was sort of things not developed properly and then she's just naturally more susceptible to it. Didn't think anything in regards to the stress and trauma. No correlation there in the mental and emotional aspect, but it's obviously quite common for women to have recurrent cystitis. So he just sort of thought, you know, this is just your path. You just got to do the antibiotics. That's just sort of the way it goes.
The way it is, yeah. Mm. So your sister decided to follow the homeopathic route, and this was a determinant factor as to whether you would study. This was the bet you had with Peter. If you fix my sister, I'm going to switch over and become more of a homeopath. So a bit of pressure there, Peter. How did you approach your case? How does homeopathy approach a case like that? And what is the difference for all our listeners out there? What is the difference between a homeopathic consultation and just going to a regular medical consultation?
The Australian public love natural therapies in general, and particularly homeopaths, because firstly, we give them ample time. It's none of this 7.5 minute, single question, quick prescription, rush out the door, zip zap, Medicare card. A first consultation with me, typically for an adult with a chronic complication, is 90 minutes plus or minus. So that's plenty of time. I mean, it's not, you know, 3 days, but it's ample time in a small business to devote that much time to a new client. And we start off with the chief complaint that might take 5, 10, 15 minutes to talk about, where they start the issue that they walk in the door with. But then we say, okay, so how does that chief complaint get contextualized by everything else about you? And the public love this because it gives them a chance to not only start with what's important, but to talk about the rest of them, everything else. So everything else, this is this idea of holistic healthcare, that everything affects everything. So we inquire about everything else so that it makes sense. So we ask them about, say, how's your physical health? Does your diet and lifestyle impact on your health? All the common sense things there. Does the weather or environment make any difference? Are there psychological things of importance, including how your sleep and dreams might impact on your health? And we put this into a timeline as well, because if they're an adult, they've got a personal medical history of potential significance, and they come from a lineage, a family. So their family medical history is also significant. It may have some bearing on why they have this issue today, because some families do, many families do. And so by gathering all of that data, the chief complaint usually makes great sense. It's kind of like detective work. And here am I listening, actively listening, making intelligent queries. Why is it so? Why? And so at the end of the chat, I can give some feedback and say, in summary, like an executive summary, Ashley, this is why I think it's so, like this. And they go, oh, yes, I agree. And they can tweak it if I've not got it quite right until I've got it right. And then I've got a clear understanding of what we call of the totality of the disease state, including the chief complaint. And that's the big picture. And then I may immediately know what to do, or I may need to revert to my library and my resources, my computer, my software packages, and then I search through the vast homeopathic materia medica. There's about 8,000 different homeopathic remedies to choose between, and find the one remedy that fits all of that. So then I only need to give one remedy. I don't need to necessarily do complexes or formulas or whatever, because I found something that fits the bill for everything, including the chief complaint and its whole context.
I noticed that you use the word chief complaint. That's quite different, I think, from going into a medical consultation where they're looking for the primary symptom or treating a symptom. I'd like to reinforce what you're saying, and that is that people come in with something that's worrying them, but that is potentially the tip of the iceberg, and there's a whole iceberg underneath, and rather than just, you know, worrying about the tip. And that's one of the primary differences, would you say?
Well, yes, too, because I'm not a registered medical practitioner. I'm not an allied health practitioner. I'm in the private healthcare sector. People who come and see me usually have been elsewhere first because of the seemingly cheapness of using a ZipZap Medicare card, right? And if that's not worked, and if they've been elsewhere and it's not worked, then this is why we have this foolish acronym, T-E-E-T-H, tried everything else, try homeopathy. So we get the difficult, very difficult, extremely difficult clients, right? And this is why we need to spend this time, why we need to do this detective work, this holistic investigation, to make sense of it. I have to be the detective and join the dots and say, what about this? Could it be this? What about this timing event? And then clients feel comfortable enough to tell me the really important things that no one has ever given them the time to speak of.
Yes.
And so there's often tears as well as laughter, and we have some fun and serious as well. And so they enjoy themselves. And by the time we get to the end, they're quite excited because they say, oh, someone's listened to me, heard things even my partner does not know about me, and put things together. Oh, now I realize. And there's that other cliche, a case well taken is half cured, because they realize, oh, it's because of this or that, that's why I have this problem today. Oh, right. Okay. That's interesting. And we get that as you could call that a placebo effect. But you know, if I don't prescribe them a medicine for 1, 2, 3, 5, 7 days later, and they start it because I have to post the medicine to them later, this is mostly done online these days, any placebo effect may have expired by the time they take their medicine. And they start their medicine and they say, wow, I had a client yesterday. She took a dose, and within seconds, her chief complaint made a profound change. She said, does that work that fast? And I said, yes, of course, at the speed of light. Whatever, it goes fast in terms of the changes, because we're working more in what we call a dynamic system, a system of medicine based on energy primarily that has consequences on your mind and body and physicality. And it can also reach back in time and address issues that are unresolved from your own personal medical history. And here's the kicker, your family medical history. Mm. We can give you medicines for the unresolved issues of your ancestors that have passed down the bloodline. No one has addressed it and solved it, and it's ended up in your lap. You are the conduit of unresolved issues, trauma, say, transgenerational trauma of your ancestors, medical events of your ancestors, and they've landed up in you, and you're carrying. And you know, we don't stop at the possibility that genetic engineering will be the solution. Homeopathy is the solution today, now, with a bunch of medicines called miasmatic nosodes that can reach back and make a difference.
You're getting a little bit too complicated for me right now. So let me just go back one step here. And it's really interesting that you mentioned transgenerational approaches, because even in the standard psychiatric literature, it's becoming more and more common to refer to articles or write articles or publish articles that talk about something that happened to your grandmother or great-grandmother, which being passed down, and there's published studies on that these days. It's fascinating, isn't it, what humans go through. But in our world, there are obviously lovers of homeopathy, but there's still quite a bit of skepticism out there, and they would just talk at all about being placebo or unscientific. Is there a science behind homeopathy?
Of course there is. And I'm bamboozled why these critics do not engage with the science. They say, oh, there's no literature, there's no research. There is, there's truckloads. And they've clearly not looked at it. They've just decided to have a political opinion unsubstantiated by doing the right thing and looking at the research. You might know Rachel Roberts at the Homeopathic Research Institute in London, United Kingdom. That's an excellent repository of excellent research. We at the Australian Traditional Medicine Society made a submission to the NTREAT review currently going on in Australia to have the restoration of natural therapies modalities for private health insurance rebates. And we dug up truckloads of research to submit to the government to say, look, there is evidence that it is clinically effective. And, you know, there's a whole spin on that I won't go into, but there is plenty of science to research it. But what the man in the street wants to know is, will it make a difference for me? And we've got homeopathy being practiced since 1790. So that's over 230 years. It's not the new kid on the block. It's around the world. Let me give you a couple of case studies. Let's take India and Brazil as an example. In India, young people can go to university, 5.5 years, graduate with a BHMS, a Bachelor of Homeopathic Medicine and Surgery, and go and practice homeopathy in India. There are 260,000 homeopathic medical doctors in India today. In Brazil, and speaking in Portuguese, there are 150,000 homeopathic medical doctors practicing homeopathy in Brazil today. So big and significant. Yeah. Hospital facilities as well. So if you're saying, oh, these are developing countries, well, a developed country like Switzerland and the United Kingdom also have homeopathy endorsed and with hospital facilitation and government support and funding as well. So developed and developing countries all support homeopathy. The World Health Organization say homeopathy is the second largest patronized modality of medicine in the world.
Several years ago, I was invited to give a submission to a parliamentary committee in Australia to support homeopathic medicine because some people, some practitioners, doctors had put in a complaint, and part of their complaint was it's dangerous. I couldn't find any side effects in the research. I know people have healing crisis or they go through various stages of treatment, but in terms of the classic definition of a side effect, I couldn't really find anything. Have you come across side effects?
No. And if there could, then they might actually recognize that we do something rather than a placebo. But there is a thing called nocebo, the negative effects of placebo. Yeah. And yes, there are things that pop up in the healing journey as a consequence of going back to old unresolved problems, addressing them, and there being some constructive distress. That's because change isn't always easy. Sometimes change is uncomfortable. There's no side effects. And heck, if there were, we might get a little more respect.
Yes, that's right. You need to damage a few people to get people's attention.
That's right. I mean, in the history of Australia, naturopaths in the last 25 years have had 4 adverse drug reactions and 2 deaths. That's low risk.
Yeah. Melissa, welcome back. your sister got treated and there was a successful outcome. And you then, I guess, honoured your part of the deal here with Peter and you went to study homeopathy, but you went to see Peter as a patient yourself first. Is that correct? Yeah, okay.
I did. So before you're going to really commit and go on and sign up and study, I was like, okay, I need to see you for myself and I just want to be sure that I'm sure that I'm sure. So then after those 2 experiences, then yes, I was rock solid, ready to commit.
Okay, I love that. Your primary complaint or chief complaint, I'm using Peter's words, was that you had an insatiable appetite.
I think when I went, I said, is this going to work if I'm just overall pretty robust? Because I don't really have a lot of pathology to share with you. But it's interesting how somebody can say, I would have been in my early 20s. So I'm saying, yeah, I'm really quite healthy, but... well, I do get cold sores, you know, every couple of months. I have had in my history a skin condition that looked like psoriasis, but yes, it's gone now, but yes, I did have it. I did take Roaccutane when I was younger, which is a very toxic skin suppressing drug. So I go in there saying, oh, I'm very robust, but okay, let me lay down everything that I can. And then perhaps it seems maybe I'm not, you know, perfectly vital and robust. So upon taking my case, an insatiable appetite. Yep, that would be one. And that would have been one that my mum had said I had just had since I was a baby. She said, you always ate literally double what your siblings ate. I was like, okay, that's funny. And so upon, you know, all of that, he's looking at the remedies and also considering my mind, like the way that my mind works, what is unique about me that sort of plays into the selection of a remedy. Now, there is you know, a certain aspect in homeopathy. And I sort of said, my mind is off thinking about things sort of like way up in the sky. I'll be thinking about philosophical things, but I will forget basic common sense things. You know, like I might forget that it's my husband's birthday tomorrow, things that most women would not forget. And yet I am in my mind theorizing these things that are just so out of this world. And so all of these little aspects that make up me, my spirit, my mental and emotional health, my physical health, Peter factored in, and he ended up prescribing me a remedy called sulfur. And from there, I took that remedy. I put two drops under my tongue at uni, threw it in my bag and completely forgot about it, got on with my day at college. And I went home that night and I had this splitting headache, and I'm not prone to headaches. So I remember it sort of standing out as like, oh my goodness, what have I done? My head. So then I'm eating dinner at the table with my family, and my mum just says something really quite innocent to me. And it might've honestly been something as simple as like, oh, do you want more dinner? Pass the salt, or something like that. And I have just burst into tears and just gone off on this rant. It's like the words just sort of spewed out of my mouth, and I'm sort of like, oh my goodness, but I'm hysterically crying. And I go downstairs to my room, and my mum comes down and she's like, what on earth has happened? Are you okay? You know, it's just completely out of nowhere, out of character for me. It was, I'm not usually that emotional. And during our consult, Peter had asked me, what would you say is the most traumatic thing that you have ever experienced? And I said, oh gosh, you know, I've had a pretty easy life. There's nothing sort of that really stands out. And I said, well, probably the divorce of my parents when I was younger. I took that quite to heart. I was very sad. And it was very stressful for me going in between the two houses. And so then I'm downstairs in my room 20 years later, and I'm saying to my mum, you know, do you remember this time? And you were meant to drop me at dad's, and you purposely made me late. And I'm just going off on this tangent. And again, my mum's looking at me like, where is this coming from? I don't understand. And as I'm just really letting all this out and I'm sobbing, you know, it was the first time then that mum said to me, no, I'm really sorry that things were so stressful. We never meant to hurt you. I was the oldest child, so I sort of took a lot of that stress on. And I just internalized it, as children do, as human beings do. But because I had grown up, you know, my mum said, you were the one child I never had to worry about, because you were just off living your life. You were my most robust child. I just never knew you felt this way. So that literally calmed down. She gives me a hug and says, do you want to come back up and finish dinner? And I'm like, yeah, completely over it. I go back up, and then we're probably having a bit of laugh about it. You know, Melissa's just had a bad day. I still did not correlate this as having anything to do with the homeopathics. I had truly forgotten that I had even taken it. The next morning I wake up and I've got a bit of a head cold and my lips are covered in cold sores. I'm thinking, what on earth? Like seven cold sores. I've never had that many cold sores in my life. I would usually maybe get one every 2 months. So I go to uni anyway, and I'm studying, and throughout the class, I can feel this head cold just getting way more serious. My nose is dripping. I can hardly see. My eyes are like swelling up. I'm like, holy crap, I've got to go home. But as someone who's so robust, I wouldn't have even thought about having a sick day and not going. But I'm like, I am actually sick. I have to go home. And as I leave the class and I'm walking down the stairwell, I bump into Peter going up to his class. And he's like, how are you going? And I'm like, oh, I'm actually not well. I'm a bit sick. And he's like, oh, great. The remedy's probably working. And I was like, the remedy? You think that this has something to do with that? And he's like, well, yes, of course. You know, tell me, how was your night? And I said, well, I had a splitting headache. He says, oh, great. We're detoxing, you know, sort of immediately. And I said, and then I had this real emotional outburst out of nowhere. I couldn't control myself. He said, oh, excellent. Yes. You know, your primary trauma, you know, your body and your spirit's just sort of offloading some of this baggage. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And then he said, oh, look at all these cold sores. You know, your body's blasting that viral load out onto the surface. I'm like, oh my goodness. And this head cold, we know now that a flu is a detox response. The body's just using that mucus to process it out. When he said that to me, I thought, holy crap. Wow. This stuff really works. There we go. And you know, it wasn't a placebo effect, for example, in my case, because I had no idea what to expect. I'd completely forgotten I'd even taken it. the whole process, my body was just sort of under the influence of the homeopathics. It was out of my control. So that was where I just became, I guess, a devout follower, a lover of homeopathy, and I've been that way ever since.
So you go through this change in your self-awareness, and what happens then? How long does that last for? And when you go back to Peter, what's the next thing that happens?
So, for example, after that, it probably took me about a week to come good, the cold sores to really clear. Now, Peter said, don't suppress them. Don't go get any Zevirax. Let your body run its course. It's doing something. It's detoxing. So I didn't do anything, and I just sat with the flu and got over it. It wasn't real flu, just a detox sort of process. Now, since then, I used to get cold sores every couple of months. I had them all through my teen years, and it would be times of stress or too much sun, whatever. I have not had a cold sore on my lips since then. So what I would say then is, like, the healing benefits are sustained in many cases. And it's going to depend, you know, on the person, how much of that viral load has been dumped. But that is true healing. You know, from the inside out, my body was dumping a real toxic load. I'm not sure that I actually booked back in to see Peter. I let that run its course. I might have, you know, spoken to him and had my case taken maybe 5 years later. But your average patient, you'd sort of want to do, we probably just followed up in conversation, just chatting, you know. But usually with patients, you'd want to see them after 2 or 3 months and see how they are progressing, see if you need to alter your prescription, whether you need to up the frequency of dosing.
Peter, from your experience, how long does the improvement, how long is it sustained for? Do people need a booster or an additional remedy? Do they often stay with the same remedy once you've picked it, or do you find that you need to change it very often?
One of the beautiful things about homeopathy, and probably why I chose to specialize in it, is that when a homeopath does their job right, so there's the case-taking part, the selection of the similimum prescribed in an optimum dose given over the appropriate period, is this phenomenon happens next. We call it like a healing journey. The name I give it is the direction of cure. Some people call it Herring's Law. And that is, true healing follows. And it goes like this. There's four parts. The most important things get better before the least important. So it's hierarchical. The inside gets better before the outside. So the inside includes the non-physical interior, like mental health, sleep, dreams, all of that stuff, before the physical hierarchy between, say, the nervous system first and the skin last. So you imagine a physical hierarchy. And then there's a sequence between superior to inferior, so top down. But the last one is the real kicker, the fourth. Old unresolved problems come back in reverse order over time. So if you're, I don't know how old you are, Daniel, if you're 60, then you go backwards through 60 years of unresolved problems and you fix any baggage that you've been carrying for 60 years in reverse order. So you release yourself from your handicapping and your unresolved issues and you recover. And you can track how far back you are by, oh, this reminds me of something when I was 45. Or this reminds me of something when I was 20. Or this happened to me when I was a kid when I was 3. Oh, and then you're sorted. So by releasing and relieving yourself of all of that baggage, we can actually use the C word, cure. Now, I don't know if we're now allowed to, but there you go.
Yep.
And in that way, I often ask clients to quantify how much improvement they've made. And they might say, well, look, after 2 months, they were 50% better. And I say, okay, if we continue treatment at this rate of change over time, another 8 weeks, we'll get another 50% better. And if they come back in another 2 months and say, yes, you're right, I'm 99% better, I say, well, there's no backsliding from that because you've dealt with all of this stuff. You resolved all these unresolved problems. You're feeling better in every level. There's no backsliding. Therefore, this is preventative for the future. And this is relevant when we work with infertile couples and we solve the problems for their infertility. Then they are naturally able to return and restore to making healthy, happy babies and staying pregnant for 40 weeks. That is one of the excellent tests of our thorough curative action.
In the modern world, one of the elephants in the room around infertility is really just the age that people are trying to conceive at. So where you've got someone that's a female that's, say, 40 or late 30s or early 40s, and they're trying to conceive and there's a biological clock ticking away there, how does homeopathy fit into that?
Ask Melissa. She's our fertility expert. She's seen so many more clients around fertility, but The simplest, quick answer is if they have 40 years of unresolved issues accumulated to make them infertile, and we go back and solve those unresolved problems, her fertility at 40 can be excellent rather than poor.
Melissa, if the number of eggs is less available with age, how does homeopathy compensate for that, or does it?
Yeah, so it's interesting, and it's all about the health of the person, really. Of course, there does come a time when the amount of eggs is going to just dwindle and it's just not going to be viable anymore. But what I would say is I've got patients at the moment and they've done, you know, their full fertility workups, their AMH, which is usually what our fertility clinics are using as their measure of how, like, the ovarian reserve, how fertile is this woman? Really, does she have a shot? They can make those levels double with good lifestyle, homeopathics, and also a good light diet. I would say keeping in that circadian rhythm, staying close to nature. One of the most destructive things that we have done for fertility and hormones is the invention of the blue lights, the screens, the devices, which are confusing our bodies in regards to what hormones should I be secreting when. So that's one of the biggest things. And the truth is they've done some studies with indigenous cultures who do not have anywhere near the level of toxins, the blue light, all of these artificial things. And these people are fertile into their late 40s. So I think we also have been shortchanged a little bit in regards to what we've been told is, you know, normal, that a 40-year-old woman is unlikely, but it does play in, of course. We're much more fertile when we are younger. But these days we've got a whole myriad of things that are contributing, including the fact that about 90% of women have at one point or another taken the oral contraceptive pill or any other contraceptive measures, whether they're the inserted devices, the injections, which just wipe out your periods for years at a time. We can see, right? Logic is fast, but science is slow. We know logically shutting down the reproductive system for years on end is going to have an impact on fertility, and it has. So homeopathically, we can detox a lot of that. We can really revitalize the reproductive system in many ways. And homeopathy is quick. You know, you give homeopathic folliculinum. This is the homeopathic remedy made out of estrogen. And the woman can feel that oftentimes within days. If that's around her ovulatory sort of window, that boost in fertile factors is very obvious to her. And I often think this when people are naysayers about homeopathy. If it was ever a woman, I would say, let me give you some homeopathic remedies and you tell me if your menstrual cycle doesn't completely change.
For the better.
For the better.
For the better.
So homeopathy can be used in several ways. You can look at, as Peter alluded to much earlier in this conversation, you can look at the whole picture of the person, and this is ideal to find that one remedy to suit that person. But what we're talking about now, Melissa, is using a potentized form of a hormone or an enzyme or something to actually trigger a body's response. Is that right? So
there are definitely different approaches in homeopathic medicine. Now, most of us, and Peter and I included, we would identify as being predominantly classical homeopaths, that if somebody came to me with an issue, I would take their whole case and I would look at them in their totality. However, fertility, for example, people are often coming to me, they are in a rush to get pregnant. So I've got 4 months, maybe 6 months, to try and get them pregnant before they're going to go to IVF. And I just pull out all the stops. Now, when we use multiple remedies at a time in a bit of a protocol, I find this to be extremely effective. So yes, of course, you could boost your fertility doing classical homeopathy, which is the one remedy at a time, just the same remedy for maybe 6 months. However, that comes with it also the potential for the healing crisis, the unpacking of all of that baggage. So yes, ultimately, that is the gold standard, that this person is going to end up much healthier. They're going to produce much healthier offspring after potentially a long duration of clearing all of this out with classical homeopathy. But it's simply not the reality that we face today. So using these protocols with remedies like folliculinum, and clearing what I can in a quick way in order to get them pregnant as quick as possible, prevent the recurrent miscarriages that a lot of women are experiencing these days. That's where the protocols come in and can be profoundly beneficial. Detoxing certain layers. If somebody has had some sort of medical intervention, specifically homeopathically, we can get the remedy that correlates with that exact drug that they've taken. And it's like you are re-exposing the body to the frequency of that original assault. And then you watch the vital force mount up its response and heal very quickly from that single layer. So that's more of an isopathic approach. But yes, there is a culmination of all different methods in homeopathy. But I would argue that the gold standard is classical homeopathy.
To either one of you, is there a case or a person or a situation where homeopathy won't work?
Major surgery. That's why these Indian homeopathic hospitals still have a surgical department as well. Minor surgery, homeopathy can help many of those cases. Certainly infectious diseases and epidemics, homeopathy has outstanding success. Simple cases are improved simply by anything. So homeopathy's niche in the market is usually difficult cases, because if a client has been everywhere else and no one's helped, eventually, usually through desperation or extreme intelligence, they come to us first or last. We can fix most everything else up. So only major surgery is anything we can't do.
What does major surgery do to impact the efficacy of homeopathy?
No, in terms of what we can and can't do. I can't do a hip replacement.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You've got a lump in your breast, I can have that discharged and resolved. If you've got an overstretched ligament, I can tighten it up. I've got a patient at the moment, she's got a torn meniscus in her knee. And she took her first dose of Symphytum officinalis, and in seconds, it went back into place.
Can you make me a better cyclist?
What's your problem? You fall off too often?
I'm too slow.
I mean, some of the European football teams, they do dose with arnica. They're medical doctors in Germany. You know, they give them arnica for that quick healing of that soft tissue. And for men who, like, I mean, they're traumatizing their muscles all day, every day, maybe you just need to add a bit of arnica to your water when you're cycling.
Maybe just you just train a bit more.
Either or.
Arnica is the secret of the New Zealand Crusaders rugby union team. And in fact, marathon runners have done this experiment with topical arnica ointment. They rub it on one leg and not the other, and they do their run, and they say, so there's your control, your other leg.
Right. That's how fascinating. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Amazing. What are you doing now? Are you still practicing, Peter?
Yes, my practice is booming thanks to Melissa. Melissa is a major influencer on social media. She's got, I can't remember how many, 54,000 followers or something last time I looked. And this is why she's a rising star, making an incredible difference in Australian homeopathy and in the world. The number of her followers in the Northern Hemisphere, UK, around the world is amazing. And so Melissa, as an entrepreneur, as a young businesswoman, small businesswoman, she's got some amazing plans. So she should tell us.
Melissa, hello.
Hello. So our first role, I think Peter and I realized that we were busier than capacity. We couldn't keep going on like this. I was booked out 6 months in advance. Peter's probably past 6 months now. So it really became that we need to be training up a whole new wave of people to be the homeopaths, to fill these spots. It would be our opinion that if we had as many homeopathic practitioners as we do medical doctors, this world would completely change. And really the importance of that we can see all around us. The wait times, my dad was telling me, you know, the hospitals, they cannot sustain the amount of pressure that they are under. Like, it's going to fall out the bottom of that soon. One day we might be calling ambulances that are just so overwhelmed, like there's just not enough room for the amount of sick people. So we definitely need massive systemic change when it comes to medicine. Now, our goal is to look after all of these chronic issues, even some of the acute issues, in the hopes that we lessen the burden on the established medical, you know, sort of hospitals. And in that, I would like to repeat what history used to have really with these homeopathic hospitals that were all around the world, hundreds of them. Across the US alone, only 100 years ago, they had more than 100 homeopathic hospitals. Some of these were staffed with 30 homeopaths and they would have over 3,000 beds. So these hospitals were purely dedicated to the practice of homeopathy. And that is, of course, a lofty goal for us. So we're starting with our first homeopathic hospital, which is local to Peter and I. And we've also launched a school of homeopathy where we will take these students through.
Two questions. One, what happened to the homeopathic hospitals in the US? And two, where is your are you both hospital. Brisbane, Australia based for the hospital?
Yeah, I'm more towards the Sunshine Coast and Peter's in Brisbane. So we are meeting halfway there. So we're aiming around Redcliffe. And in regards to where did the hospitals go, J.D. Rockefeller is considered by many to be the father of pharmaceutical medicine. Now, he was actually a big fan of homeopathy until he realized that he could make petrochemical drugs and make a lot of money doing such. So in that, whilst he had three private homeopaths that looked after the Rockefeller family, he undercut a lot of these universities. And in doing that, essentially, it was, I will donate this amount of money, these millions of dollars, under the proviso that homeopathy will no longer be taught alongside. Laws started to come out in the US, which such, if you are a medical doctor and you are using homeopathy, you will lose your medical license. It went so far as to have a law that any medical doctor who even consults with a homeopath, fraternizes, has a conversation with in any way, you will lose your medical license, your right to practice. So you can imagine what people were up against. And ultimately, when you stomp it out of the universities, you no longer have people studying it over time. What are they to do? That knowledge is going to die out. There was not a big enough wave of people to sustain it and keep these hospitals going. And they were bought out. And also, this is when, you know, the new age, sort of like the drugs are coming in, a lot of the antibiotics, the steroids, a lot of those treatments were rising along this time. So it's like you can see how homeopathy began to fall. Now, the interesting thing about where we are in the world now is that we are realizing very sort of quickly now, most people are realizing the downfall of the abuse of antibiotics, abuse of steroids, abuse of drugs in any way. That is obvious by our crippling fertility crisis, the chronic health conditions that is just flooding. You know, your average person is on how many drugs when they're over 60 years old? It's a real issue. And people are really waking up to it. And more than ever, people want to be truly healthy. They want to be vibrant. It doesn't feel natural to them anymore to be ingesting all of these synthetic chemicals to try and stay well. So it's just a time in the world that homeopathy is on the rise like never before. And we just want to be a part of it in this big rollout where we've had 500 students so far sign up to our two-year course to become a homeopath. And the way that Peter and we've also got Dr. Jean Duckworth in the UK is also a director in our school. And you think the power of 500 new homeopaths trained with the level of knowledge, you know, that Peter holds, that Jean holds, it's going to have a ripple effect that really influences the whole world.
So are your students people starting from scratch or are they other health professionals of some sort who are adding to their knowledge?
A real mix. We've got in that group of 500, I think we've got about 200 nurses or midwives, and they can't bear where they're working. They feel that they're not really part of the solution and they want to be. They want to get into really healing people so that they're not in the hospitals day in, day out with all these chronic conditions. So a lot are nurses. A portion of them have studied homeopathy, like short courses with us previously, so they understand. Once you have that real exposure to homeopathy, a lot of people get obsessive. And I would say a great portion of these people are just obsessed. They're so hungry for knowledge. And then, yeah, we've got the beginners as well. So a whole mix there.
Has the college got a name?
We are the RMDY Academy of Homeopathy.
RMDY Academy of Homeopathy. And is that the website?
Yeah. So it's rmdyacademy.org.
And people can go there and find out more about courses and presumably just read a bit more about homeopathy.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Guys, you are amazing. And how is your sister now? Any more cystitis?
No, she is well. Good She's old well. Staph aureus.
Okay, wonderful. And how are you doing, Melissa?
I am well.
Okay, good. Marvelous story, and I'm really glad that you found your true path in life. Well done.
Thank you.
Peter, I knew you'd get her there. Well done.
Yes, I found my true path too. This is all I've ever done since I was 14 years of age.
Really? 14?
All I've done. Ever since I was 14, I wanted to do this. I didn't know it was called being a homeopath, but whatever I wanted to do has manifested in all my path, my journey, my evolutionary growth. My purpose, my meaning, my, you know, is wrapped up in practicing medicine well. So as a homeopathic physician, I feel as though I've really found my niche. I'm doing what I'm meant to do. And that's why I'm very encouraging the likes of Melissa and the students in the past, the students in the future, my colleagues, the whole profession, and in fact, the whole natural medicine industry around the world.
Well, I'm very grateful for it. And thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us on, Daniel.
Thanks, Daniel.
If you feel that this story could be of benefit to you or someone you know, please like it and share it. If you have a health story yourself and feel that sharing it might make a difference to another person, please head over to our website, apatientstory.com. We would love to hear from you. And as a reminder, in this podcast and on our website, the information provided relates to the specific health requirements of an individual and may not relate to your health circumstances or that of another person. Please do not make any changes to your treatment without consulting your health professional. Thank you.